This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 108. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who owns enough hats to wear a different hat every day of the month, and I am Jacob Paulson.
Jacob hates windshield wipers.
They make it pretty hard to see. They're in your face constantly.
I think it's hard to see when you have water blocking or snow blocking your view.
Well, the human eyeball is capable of aperture. As a photographer, you know what I mean by that. You should be able to focus beyond said water on the windshield.
And beyond said windshield wipers?
The wipers are bigger.
And they're moving.
Yeah, it's worse.
They're there one moment and gone the next.
they're awfully obtrusive.
To the point that I think, is it your mom and your wife get concerned about riding with you when it's raining or something?
Virtually all people with prescription vision.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true, because we were in New Hampshire, and at one point I did kind of I was like, dude, like, I got to use the wipers. Anyway, today we have with us on the podcast that we'll be playing back the interview of with Jason Schauble, president of Silencer Co. And in fact, we are here in Utah this week, and part of that purpose was to come and visit Silencer Co., where they gave us really kind of like an insider access to their facility here. We're able to get a full tour of their operation. They even let us see into the Holy of Holies R&D section.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. We really did. I mean, they just treated us really well. I mean, a huge thank you to everybody at Silencer Co. who really went to some effort to make sure that our experience there was VIP. It was second to none. We really got to see all the machines, the ranges there, talk to all the awesome people, marketing team, the engineers, the workers, the executive team. It was really amazing.
Yeah, it really was, and it became very clear to me how much effort. I mean, they've literally gone from a nobody in 2008 to the biggest player in the suppressor market by 2017, actually earlier than that. That's just phenomenal to me, to take an industry by storm. Mm-hmm. In such short time.
And one of the most impressive things they've done, I think, and this is a big part of their success, is education. This is a company who really believes in educating the consumer, not just, specifically about, the NFA ATF processes, how to obtain suppressors, but they also just believe, generally speaking, that education is a huge pillar of their company. And you'll hear in a minute, Jason will talk about some of the numbers and what they've been able to achieve and what they do. But I just Silencer Co. really, at this point, is a brand that can't be ignored, no matter what part of this industry you're in.
True. And it wasn't just education. This is what was eye-opening to me, Jacob. I don't think I had any sort of clue as to this part of it. It wasn't just education of the masses, education of the consumer, those that are buying their products, but also educating dealers. Do you remember he said, and I think even when we were talking with Matt, their PR guy, they were explaining how there was a lot of dealers that didn't know how easy it was for them to deal and sell, in suppressors. And so they spent a lot of time just going along, basically traveling the country, talking with dealers and saying, hey, look, here's all you got to do. And bam, we can get you set up as a dealer. And I think, they really were able to expand and grow their company as quickly as they did, because they kind of grassrooted it to a large extent, as far as getting themselves into maybe not every store, but a lot of stores across the country.
Yeah, you could even say they almost created their market.
Yeah, yep. So, by the way, today's episode is brought to you by Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition, proudly made right here in the USA by Sig Sauer. One of the things I really appreciate is that Sig Sauer engineers lead the way by designing their Elite Performance FMJ target ammunition to the same performance specifications as their Elite V-Crown self-defense jacketed hollow points. This ensures that you train how you fight while also saving you money. If you are looking for reliable ammunition at a great price, check out Sig Sauer Elite Performance Ammunition today, available at many of your favorite sporting goods stores, online, and especially at our website, concealedcarry.com/SigAmmo. And also, today's episode is brought to you by Sports Afield and Mantis X. And so, Jacob, what do you say? I mean, do we get into it now with Jason?
Yeah, let's do it. Pay close attention. This is a fun interview because Jason really just does really well on microphone. He's very accustomed to talking about their industry and what he does. And so we try and lead this a little bit with some questions, but he just does a great job of talking so much about, you're going to learn about the NFA, you're going to learn about suppressors, you're going to learn about the current legislation, the Hearing Protection Act. You're going to learn a lot about the industry. And he's going to talk quite a bit about the Maxim 9, which I think is a huge focal point of this interview. So you're going to learn a lot about what does it take for a company that makes suppressors to start making guns, with built-in suppressors. So this is going to be great, and I think you're going to learn a ton.
Cool. All right. Well, let's take it away.
All right, Jason. Such a pleasure to sit down with you here today. We're here at Silencer Co. HQ, right in the heart of West Valley City, Utah. And Jason, we're so honored that you've taken the time to sit down and talk with us today.
Sure. I'm looking forward to it.
So, Jason, if you wouldn't mind for us, just give us a quick rundown of who you are, your background. And then also how you came to be at Silencer Co.
I'm the president of Silencer Co. So I pretty much run all the sections for our two founders, Jonathan Schultz and Josh Waldron. They founded the business in 2008, and they basically in their garage, like buying one machine, they started to get into silencers, and they realized that there wasn't a lot of education in the market. There were not a lot of people knew much. It was really hard and it wasn't easily explained. And they thought there was a gap there to exploit. So they decided to start making silencers. They started with the Sparrow and the Osprey because they thought, hey, we can make a rimfire silencer that doesn't get that's easy to clean or go a long time between cleaning intervals with a different design change. They came up with the Osprey because they thought you could come up with a non-round silencer. And I think that was when a lot of our innovation kind of started there. Sure, do we have round silencers? Yes, and they still work. Did the Osprey then lead to the Salvo, then lead to the Maxim 9? That's kind of the essence of our innovation story is how did we go from the traditional round since Maxim back in the 1920s to where we are today. A lot of it was being able to take chances with how it's designed and the modularity. And so that kind of innovation has always been the key to all of our product line. Product always comes first. So since 2008, we have grown in excess of 100% a number of years in there. We were close to, 70 million last year. We did 120,000 plus silencers. That's more than 75% of the market. It's more than all of our competitors combined. Yet it started out with two products in 08, 09. They came and built they got a building and then they expanded again in 2014 and doubled the size of that building, the building you're in today, which is 72,000 square feet. We have 60 plus CNC machines. We have 260 employees. During the heyday last year, obviously, we doubled from the previous year. This year we'll still grow off of 15, but last year, because of the 41F rule change, we had a lot of, between January and July, we had a surge of business that we were able to surge our supply chain and our manufacturing capabilities to meet. So it was a great opportunity. And now in this environment in 2017, we're still faced with once again another potential surge opportunity. And so, this company has been founded on innovation all along. And while we're confronted with a surge opportunity in the form of potential legislation, we're still focused on making really cool stuff. And I think that's what unifies most of the people on the management team is they like to invent new and interesting things that haven't been done before. Whether it's a shotgun silencer, whether it's a silencer that's not round, whether it's a integrally suppressed 9mm pistol, and kind of where we're intending to go from there is into integral suppression across the board. That's what really excites us more so than making more silencers than anyone else or, making the business a certain number in revenue is making stuff that we can be proud of, that we want to carry, that and we all hunt and shoot and use the products that we have here. As I mentioned earlier, another big thing about this company was education. When our founders couldn't figure out how to get good information about how to buy this and they didn't understand why that was like underground, they said, how do we become good at this? How do we, to this day, silencers are legal, which is a small pamphlet. that we put out in hard copy form. You know, we do tens of thousands of those a year. They go to gun stores around the country. Just letting people know in this country, you know, when you look at the numbers are is about 1.2 million registered silencers to individuals in this country. Some of them have more than one, right? Sure. There's 320 million probably firearms in this country right now. You add about 14 million to the installed base every year of, you know, pistols, rifles, shotguns. Yeah. There's only about 5 to 8% of dealers that are not Curio and Relic, that are not necessarily pawn shops, just core firearms dealers. Only about 5 to 8% of those have their SOT. So, you know, you're talking about a population of 50 to 60,000 and a population of 5,000 that have their SOT. So we look at it as our mission every day to wake up and say, how do I make a new dealer today? How do I make a new customer today? And you'll see that in our education materials. You also see that in our marketing. We put out more content than anybody else in the firearms industry. And a lot of that content is done with talent that doesn't come from the firearms industry. We are not going down the well-worn path of this famous hunter or this famous three-gun shooter. We're going down into adjacent and what we call adjacent and reach markets. We want to go hunting with somebody who's not a core gun guy, but who loves to hunt, a normal person, but also who has their own following and their own, you know, whether it's rodeo, whether it's CrossFit, whether it's extreme sports. You'll see all of our videos. It's not about what we can just send it to. It's about how now they're sending it to their community. Hey, fit people between the ages of 30 and 50. That's a great community for us.
Yeah.
Hey, people who like monster trucks, people who like skateboarders, people who like, you know, street bike racers. Well, there's a reason why when we look at our customer demos based on our registration data and subscriber data, over 30% of our demos are under 30. Nobody else in the gun industry has a third of their customers under 30. One of our stated goals when we first built this company was to say, it used to be the guy who had 30 to 50 guns that got into NFA. Mm-hmm. How do we take a guy who's in on his third gun and is like, I want to get a silencer for these guns? That's a win for us. And we're starting to see that in the numbers because we have a sophisticated data operation that allows us to trace those numbers. So those are just some of the things that we started with, was the innovation, the education, and then the rest of it kind of naturally followed from there.
I think you do that when you introduce snowboarding down a mountain while shooting a gun.
We do. Well, it was about Scotty likes to try new things. He's an adrenaline junkie. Yeah. He has his own following of snowboarders. We realized that, you know, we were going to catch a certain amount of criticism for doing that. But at the same time, it was fun. Like, he had a good time. We made sure it was safe. And that has actually been one of our best performing videos, you know, of all time.
No doubt.
Because he got picked up in a lot of different places. And that's the thing about content these days. I mean, I know this isn't like essentially a marketing discussion, but it really kind of, that is in essence to why we've been successful and why our people know our brand is, you know, it's that reach. It's about getting new eyeballs that didn't know you could own one. Every person that says, oh, you can, I didn't know you could have one of those. And, oh, that must make the experience a lot better. That's a win. That's somebody who is considering, right? And that's somebody who's going to want to go learn about it. And at some point, it's someone who's going to be able to have the means, the resources, and the inclination to actually buy it. So it's, we look at it like it's a content community called action model, right? Like, engage people with content that's interesting to them. It makes them want to go watch more content. It makes them want to learn more. It makes them want to kind of become part of the community. They might buy a shirt. They might buy a muzzle brake. Yeah. You know, if you were to see like our muzzle device sales in like California, right? Of people who just wish they could have one.
Right.
Or the sales of the we did a collaboration with CZ on the Scorpion. They came out with a faux silencer because there's a lot of pent up. I mean, you're talking about 42 states for ownership, 40 for hunting. There's other 8 states actually are pretty big. Illinois. California in terms of population, in terms of being core hunting people.
Yeah.
You don't think of California as a hunting state, but it's kind of a ridiculously large portion of the U.S. population.
Yeah.
It just is.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, I think our biggest listenership of the podcast...
California.
...is California.
California, Texas, Florida.
Yeah. So, you know the people are there. You know they're interested.
They are, and they want to be part of something, even if they can't buy, and that's great. That's great for us. Yeah. And so whether, you know, we try to find people to work with and brands to work with. So we work with other brands too, whether it be, you know, Vortex for optics or whether it be, you know, even someone like Traeger Grills. We want to show when we do our harvested content, the whole hunt and how it ends. Like how it ends is most of the people who go hunting harvest an animal to eat it. Like, let's just show them how that works. these are the kinds of things that we do just to get new people. And getting new people in and getting new dealers in. We have our own branded sales force. We don't use rep groups or anything else. We have our own guys out there. They own territories. And their whole job is to support the dealers we have and to create new dealers, to find guys who meet the profile of what we've seen as being successful. Oh, they have a range. Oh, they display accessories and stuff in an accessible way. Oh, they have a knowledgeable sales force. And we actually have a model of what we've seen are factors of success for a dealer, and how do I make more guys want to deal in these products.
Sure. Jason, speaking of education, for those who might be listening to this, and they're one of those people you talk about, like, what, silencer? I can have a silencer. Can you give us the quick rundown, you know, NFA 1934, where are we at today? What does it look like? And you know, maybe we can go from there to current legislation.
Sure. I mean, the simplest way is in 1934, the U.S. government decided to control certain items. They controlled short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, machine guns, and silencers. And they were done for different reasons. There's a perception out there that there was a lot of crime committed with silencers, and that's just never been the case. It was really done and with respect to poaching. It was the Great Depression, and it was kind of the poaching of the king's deer. People were hunting deer out of season, like the Robin Hood scenario.
Sure.
They were starving. They didn't have jobs. Yeah. And so the government was like, well, we can't have that, right? So at that point in time, they levied what was in today's dollars, a $3,400 tax. It was actually a $200 tax, but in the 1930s, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Now, take a fast forward to today, that tax in real dollars is less. So that's one element of it, right? It was also controlled at a federal level where as an individual, you had to buy with a – we had to submit fingerprints and photographs and have a more extensive background check than a NICS check. So you have a normal NICS check. You go in, you fill out a form called a 4473 to buy a gun, and there's usually – and depending on the state, there's an instant check or a very short period check where you can obtain that firearm and walk out of the store with it. Well, there's then a next level check that essentially is – fingerprints, photographs, and the FBI conducts the background check. That makes it hard. So now I got to pay a tax above and beyond the cost of the item itself, and then I have to go through this background check. And that wait has always been prohibitive. It's been as little as 3 to 4 months when they had a electronic form submission program, and then it broke. And then it's been up to a year or more to get your paperwork back. So there's not too many people that buy consumer products that they have to pay more for in the form of a $200 tax. They might be paying a tax already. They just don't know it.
Sure.
Then submit to a background check each time they buy it. And then in addition, have to wait a year. You basically forget about it. At any different time, I have like five of these things in flight. I've just accepted it. But what we have found, once somebody has bought one and gotten through the other end, they're usually like, whatever, I'll just put another one in. It's kind of like Christmas all year round, right? Like stuff rolls in every 2 to 3 months, I get a new NFA item. And that's how I feel at this point about short barrel rifles, short barrel shotguns, or silencers, or even machine guns, is it's like, I get it. It's not a big deal. But when it is an initial barrier to entry that we have to explain to people. And then last year, there used to be a thing called a trust, or there still is. You could buy on a trust or a corporation before July 13th of last year, and not all the members of it. Nobody had to go through that background, the fingerprints and photographs, still had to pay the tax. And also, the trust was essentially used a lot by people who bought silencers because the individual way to buy it, buying it as an individual, you had to get chief law enforcement officers sign off. In a lot of jurisdictions, chief law enforcement officers didn't want to vouch for the guy is essentially what it said. It says, I know this person and I don't think he's a bad person. Well, a lot of places, the chief law enforcement officer of that jurisdiction runs for office. And all it takes is one silencer crime, even though ATF data has shown there haven't been any silencer crime in a long time. All it takes is one, you know, and all of a sudden that guy's, oh, you signed off on that guy having a silencer. So a lot of CLEOs or chief law enforcement officers didn't want to sign off on it. So most people bought via a trust because like I live in Austin, Texas, that guy wouldn't sign off. And in Texas, the good news is we have county, state, Texas Rangers, Parks and Wildlife, anybody with basically chief law enforcement officer arrest authority, you can kind of shop CLEOs in Texas for a period of time. That was a thing. But now, post 41F, every person This is a rule change the ATF made, is whether you're on a trust or as an individual, every person has to do fingerprints, photographs, and go through that more extensive background check. Mm-hmm. And we actually provide a guide on our website, silencerco.com, that actually you can either download and you can either print out or you can get in hard copy form that walks you through step by step, because there's a thing called a responsible person, i.e. other people on your trust. We've seen a lot of people go swing back towards buying as individuals now, because it's just more of a pain in the neck to go get their wife and their brother and whoever, somebody might from out, you know, uncle from out of state and whatever else. So the benefit of the trust was still, if I own the item, other people can use the item. Technically, if you're an individual, the other, unless you are exercising proper dominion and control, i.e. you're right next to the item, or you know that item is in your possession, someone else is not allowed to just drive home with it. Right. Sure. And that's, you've now separated that. That person's in illegal possession of it. And that's a significant fine or jail time they're facing. So the trust allowed you to have everybody own it. But now that's harder to buy with a trust. A lot of people are swinging back towards buying as an individual because the dollars are the same. I just have fewer people have to fill out paperwork.
Yeah. Sure.
Yep. So this is the landscape we live in right now, is the most highly regulated consumer product in the United States. It's actually been pointed out during the 41F comment period that it's easier to get a permit to build a nuclear power plant in this country than it is to buy an NFA item.
That's amazing.
Which is where Hearing Protection Act comes from, right? Which is where, like, in October of 05, Representative Salmon decided, hey, you know what? I want to introduce legislation to change this. These things are tubes that are not inherently dangerous. They're mufflers. They have benefits. And even the ATF itself admitted in the Turk white paper that came out a couple of weeks back that, like, these things isn't a lot of crime associated with silencers, and criminals don't commit a lot of crime with, they don't go buy the best equipment. They're criminals for a reason. They need to go generate money. Like, they're not out there trying to find NFA items. Points. Right. Shooting them sideways. Right. So this is the kind of the landscape under which HPA comes in. Is HPA says, we will make it so that buying a silencer is, you're still going to go through a background check. It's just going to be back to that 4473 NICS check level background check, instant in most gun-friendly states.
Right? And eliminate the tax.
And eliminate the tax, yes. Yeah. Because and the argument that is made, and one of the reasons it's in a tax committee now, is that, like, the market's going to expand 10 times. So there are taxes will still be generated sufficient to cover whatever losses would be. Because right now, $200 per item times X number of items, but 10X that, you're going to be doing just fine on sales tax and, business taxes. Everybody benefits within that entire circle who buys. And there's still a very large unaddressable market. So that would immediately swing open the doors of the whole market. And obviously we would love this to happen. We're very big on advocacy. We have our own Fight the Noise, .org campaign, where we encourage people to go in and enter their zip codes and write letters to their congressman. We've had literally close to 100,000 letters written since we started Fight the Noise to congressmen and senators. And now we're at the pace of, like, tens of thousands a month. HPA has been the Hearing Protection Act has been the number, two or three most viewed bill on congress.gov since its inception in 2015. And it got reintroduced again at the beginning of this year. And now it's a matter of trying to figure out where it fits into the legislative agenda for the president and the legislative Republican legislature. And then also, it's got to get through committees. It's got to get through the Senate. It's got to get co-sponsors. All these things take time. So we'd love it to happen. We're going to do everything we can to have it happen, but we also have business to run in the interim. What we have found is, over the course since President Trump won, we've had a lot of people be like, oh, like, this is a fait accompli. It's going to happen overnight. I'll just wait. And the thing is, average legislation takes 260 something days to pass. You have 5% of bills that get introduced actually pass. Could it get stuck in healthcare reform? Well, that's over now, but could it get stuck in tax reform? Could it get stuck? There's a lot of places where it could, it's not a long bill. It's not a highways, right? Yeah. It's very simple. And it could get put into something that could pass. It could get done as a standalone bill. And so all of this is strategy that's kind of out of the hands of us as a brand. Right. At the end of the day, as a company, we don't control this. The National Shooting Sports Foundation is involved. The Congressional Sportsman's Foundation is involved. The NRA is involved. The American Suppressor Association is involved. And obviously, we talk regularly to try to open new states, but also to talk about HPA. But that could change things significantly. But we have to plan a business around what is today, that it is a highly regulated marketplace. And the best thing we can do and the best thing we found is over 30% of our revenue every year has always been new products. Mm. So shipping the Maxim 9 next month, which is still our intention in April of this year, is still the number one thing that we can do to ensure the success of our company is like come up with something that hasn't been done.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about the Maxim 9. That's going to be a big focal point here today. But just to reiterate for those who are listening, make sure you check out fightthenoise.org. And, you know, if you're
And silencerco.com,
which has tons of education, wonderful resources, content to help you understand all these things we've been talking about. So if you want to go deeper, those are great resources.
Well, just real quick, you know, I've got the website here in front of me. And the first thing you see, if you go to how to buy, you know, purchase as an individual or purchase through a trust.
Very
simple.
Take
your pick, whichever route you're going to go. And then it walks you through the process. There's an easy guide here. How everything works, how silencers work, how the ordering or the purchasing and the background check and all that process works.
Local laws.
Where you can and cannot buy. So really, you know, if you're considering getting a silencer, go to silencerco.com. They make it really easy to go through the process. So what we have here in front of us sitting on the table is the new Maxim 9. I understand this is the final production item right here.
It is. Right now we're doing what we call 1A and 2A runs, which is where we run hundreds at a time and do some random sample testing to make sure that all of the things that we saw in our development process are vetted out. So when we develop something this complicated, right? Yeah. The goal is we do what's called engineering evaluation testing, which is when we build prototypes that meet a certain requirement. And then design acceptance testing is your next step. And that's when we build guns off of production tools, because there's always the difference between the engineers building stuff and the operations guys building stuff. And we have to make sure that those two things are as close to being the same as possible, and that things that the engineers thought were easy to do. Oh, that's going to be easy. Like, we'll hand wave it. Well, when the guys actually have to put them on machines in mass production, they're like, oh, like, that's not easy at all. And that's been some of the source of our delay from we wanted to be able to ship these by the end of last year, but we also like recognize this hasn't been done and we want to make sure we did it right. You get one chance to do this kind of thing right. And our other major consideration for this is we didn't want it to be a novelty. Like, oh, this is good, but it's only good for like 500 rounds and you got to get a new one or whatever. Like this is I can solidly stand behind, this is an in excess of 10,000 round gun before you might have to do some, you know, somebody might have to replace something on it. The goal was to move as much of the gun to the rear of the firearm as possible to give you as much room up front. Despite the fact that it looks bigger than a normal handgun, the front is filled with air. This is aluminum. Your steel is back here. So it actually has a really good balance and weight for what it looks like. You have an RMR cut on the top. You have key mount on the bottom to put a rail or a light or something like that on it. It takes Glock mags. We ship them with the Magpul equivalent of Glock mags. And basically, it comes in a long configuration, and this is the short one. Basically, it comes in a long configuration is about 1.2 inches longer, and that allows you to shoot hearing safe or under 140 decibels with all 9mm ammo, including plus P+. This is about, I can shoot, the short version is about being hearing safe with all ammo that is 147 grain or above or subsonic, including duty rounds. Mm-hmm. Most police duty rounds, you've seen a trend in this country where police duty rounds have gone from 9mm, 115 grain jacket hollow point to 124 grain to everybody went to 40, 10mm, 45. And now we've seen this big circle back to 9. Yeah. And the circle back to 9 because the technology's improved on the ammunition, but also just, you know, people have learned over time that some of these other cartridges, the bang for the buck is not worth it.
Sure.
So that's why we chose 9. 9's still the 223 of the pistol marketplace, right? At the end of the day, everybody makes all these rifles, but they're, you know, 20% of the market and 80% of it is the 5.56. Right? Yeah. So it's the same thing here with 9mm. Our intention was to get one of these right. Could we do more? Sure. I don't think that we're going to extend out of the gate to a lot of the other pistol calibers initially. Our goal was if we're going to go to another pistol caliber, we would want to make it smaller, like a 380 or a 22, but it has to be at least 75% of this size or 50% of this size. I don't want to just take this chassis and plug another round in it and
sure,
go, right?
Sure.
It just doesn't, there's no value proposition. And we have a lot of conversations about this between Josh and John, the founders, and myself about like, hey, what do we do next and why does it matter? And, you know, so we are, this was the beginning. We've been very excited about this project. It comes apart very easily. It's easy to maintain. You can see how it borrows from the Salvo and that you have the, you know, the two rods up front. They give you a shorter rod kit. night sights was one of our biggest challenges, and we just solved that in terms of the what this heat gets up to when we do a stress test on it, you know, right at the front tip, and being able to house the tritium vial so that you can have night sights, because that was really important to me. It's a $1,500 pistol. Comes with two magazines. It's interlocutor pressed. What we wanted it to be was the price of a good pistol plus a good silencer, and we wanted it to be less than that. And we wanted it to be a duty-grade firearm. That's, we think we've achieved that.
Good goal.
That was really the intent. And we also wanted to be pre-cut for an RMR. We wanted to have night sights. You don't buy a $1,000 pistol like an HK or a high-end 1911 and expect that it's not going to have some certain things, right?
Yeah.
So that was our intent with this project, was like, we've learned a ton. We've never made guns before. We made mufflers. Now we're making it. You know, you have two serial numbers. You have the serial number for the silencer. You have the serial number for the firearm. And so, you know, we're really excited to get these out because we know there's a lot of demand for it. In this environment where it's been a little bit harder to buy, that's definitely something that I think has been really helpful. From here, we do intend to go into other platforms. I mean, we have a market leadership position both in volume and performance across the board, whether it be the Rimfire series with Sparrow, Spectre, Warlock, whether it be pistol with Osprey Octane, whether it be rifle with the Omega line and the Saker line and the Harvester line. So in each of our product categories, our goal was to have the tank that can take anything that's the quietest thing possible. And then we always have the K series, or short for Curse, which is, you know, where the Germans came up with it originally. We borrowed some from that lineage, but we always find that the initial customer wants the quietest thing because he thinks it's about sound. That customer then matures into the K customer, who just wants the smallest, lightest thing that makes it 139 decibels or less.
Right.
And so we sell an inordinate amount of the K cans over time to our customers, because we see that evolution of them starting out as a quiet person, because they think that's what, oh, I get it, it's quiet. And then they're like, well, it doesn't need to be that quiet. And I'm carrying all this other stuff on my rig. And, you know, like in Texas, guys are hog hunting. They got thermals, they got lasers. And they're like, hey, I'd rather just shoot 300 blackout and put an Omega 9K on it that big.
Yeah.
Great.
Much
and
lighter.
It's hearing safe, right? Yep. It's not necessarily about being 120 decibels. If I can get 135, I'm good. As long as I don't have to wear hearing protection, I can hear what's going on. A lot of that is about that situational awareness and being able to shoot around other people and be able to have a conversation and all those kinds of things. So, but overall, now that we've covered that whole line of, and we don't really want to do diminishing returns and go down the 50 cal road and go down like the, you know, 375 H&H road or something. I mean, there's always going to be a customer to service, but those veins are not very deep. So we try to create as versatile products like the hybrid for people who we don't catch with something else. And then go into the Maxim line, which is the integrally suppressed line. So there's no reason why we can't make rifles, shotguns, subguns, now that we have kind of figured out the concept. It's the same concept. Move as much of the gun to the back.
Yep.
You got to come up with a unique design. You know, sorry for all those out there that want to copy this. It's hard. It took like 2 to 3 years to get this done, but it also takes most major gun companies 2 to 3 years to make a line extension of something in camouflage. So right, I don't really feel that bad about 2 to 3 years, right? Like, you know, and I've worked at some of these places. I ran Remington Defense after I got out of the military, and all contract work, all the stuff that Remington sold to other government organizations. I've worked with silencers before. Remington acquired AAC during that period of time, and I've worked some with AAC. I've worked in optics with a company called Tracking Point, which does long range precision optics that are also have software and electronics involved. And then, you know, I came here to silencers because it's always something I've been passionate about. I like making things, right? And so making the gun plus silencer equation shorter and integrated one of my prize of my own personal gun collection is an MP5 SD. It's still one of the funnest guns to shoot. It's the gun that symbolized to me when I was in the military, when you get in the special forces community, you get the black Velcro and the MP5 and like you made it. And like, so there's always an emotional attachment to my generation who participated in the US military and was in the special forces community, that like what HK meant to them. As a commercial brand, they're not necessarily there, but as that, you know, they have that panache. Yeah. That was done in the late 1960s.
Wow,
it's not, that was not a hard The Russians have some products, but the Russians tend to make it have to be specialty ammo only. So if you look at a lot of the Russian integrally suppressed stuff, they give on the ammo side. We don't want to give on the ammo side. We want people to be able to use normal ammo, commercially available ammo. So these are all the parameters when we're going. The same thing that happened with Salvo. Did somebody do a shotgun silencer before? Yes. Red Jacket made a couple of them. But it was for this platform, for this ammo. Like, we were like, look, like, that's not, there's no market there for that. Well, if we want to sell several thousand of these, we need to make it work on pumps and semis and inertias. And everyone's like, that's never going to happen. And we want to be able to work with almost all ammo and almost all guns. We always realize that hypersonic steel through a short barrel is probably a bad idea. But there's always going to be somebody who does it. So let's just say we don't do that.
Yeah.
But otherwise, like, that was kind of the goal of Salvo. It's the goal here too. Like, yeah, could I have made this thing smaller and potentially lighter if we had said it only works with this one bullet? But like, I don't think that's reasonable. I don't think that gets it. Let's look at the pistol market, right? 6 million pistols are sold a year in this country. That's, you know, manufactured plus import minus export. 1% of the pistol market is 60,000 guns a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd love to get this to 1% of the pistol market, right? That would be as big as our core business.
That'd be huge.
Right? Yeah. Now, and I don't think that's unreasonable, but that's one of the things of like, but if it only used one bullet and it only lasted 500 to 1,000 rounds, it would become a novelty thing that collectors have. And that's not what our desire was with this. And I've been carrying one of these for months. You know, we have put it through every test imaginable. We shoot them all the time and we give feedback. All of our sales force has them. So, you know, this has been thought through in terms of how do we get to something like this, because it is groundbreaking. It's not like anything else you'll see. And once people have them in their hands, unfortunately, that will take likely until 2018 before people actually own them and shoot them. I think we'll really see a revolution in what people's expectations of a firearm are. And then our goal was just to have this in the market about the time that potentially legislative change happens. So if you get to that point where a guy can choose between a full-size Glock and a Maxim in a display case, and the regulations are the same, you might be like, hey, you know what? That's better long-term for me to have. I'd rather just go for it now instead of buying this plus this plus this. So the whole integral suppression thing becomes a lot easier if the regulations change.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, it's just cool.
Yeah, it's one of the coolest things I've been involved with. And, I've been involved with some really cool development projects, you know, sniper rifles for the military or carbines or, advanced electro-optics. And this has definitely been a really, really great experience. Mm.
And I understand that, for those who are interested in this gun, you guys are basically have already sold everything you can manufacture for the rest of the year. Is that right?
Yeah. So our initial projections were going to do 12,000. We're going to do about 1,000 a month. And I still think we will be able to meet or exceed that, even though we're shipping in April, based upon just what, we've done the math and we said, hey, we promised the marketplace this amount of guns. You know, it all comes down to, in the gun industry, people expect this. They expect somebody to launch something in January and they don't see it until September. That's been an expectation that we've tried to get away from. So in the last few years, we've launched in January when stuff was already at distributors. That's the perfect model. And I like to call it, it's like Ruger does this. They do this very well.
Yeah.
I don't own a ton of Ruger products, but I appreciate their sales and logistics strategy and how they move so many guns. Because when they say something's ready, in this day and age with the media environment, when I put out content on this, someone goes, that's cool, I want to buy it. And then they lose interest if it's not available. Yeah. And that's something that the firearms industry has not really done a very good job of, is it's kind of like, and 9 months later, they're like, yeah, I really, that bullet that we were supposed to come out of SHOT Show, is that still out yet? Like, no, like, why not? Like, or I can't find it somewhere. And we don't, so I look at it as, yes, that I did not want there to be a gap between when we started talking about this and when it happened, but we're doing our best to close that gap and to catch up, because I believe that we should keep our promises to the marketplace. If we can do more than 12,000 and we'll exit at that rate, we can do a lot more next year. And our intention is to come out with a second integrally suppressed product this year and also next year. And so we have multiple cells working on multiple things. That's been always been a, as a small company, we've had to grow to be able to do more than one big project at once and transfer that project, more than one project to production at once. Those have been challenges. I've worked, we've actually brought in some outside help, some people who I actually worked with before when I was at Remington Defense, who I knew could work on timelines and help us kind of fill some gaps in terms of how do we how do we transition some of this stuff?
Talk, Jason, quickly about your guys' dedication to manufacturing here, you know, locally, and what that, how that's part of your brand and your company.
So Josh and John's, you know, belief in vertical integration really came down to controlling quality, controlling cost, and controlling delivery, right? I mean, if the more you outsource, the more you're going to have minor variances in tolerance stack between pieces. And you'll see that there's some, there's a lot of Black Rifle manufacturers who suffer from this. Okay. Mm-hmm. They have a, they don't actually make anything. Yep. They have a supply chain that has three guys making uppers, three guys making lowers, three guys making barrels. And then they get all this stuff in. And depending on what comes in, no matter how good their incoming parts QC is, there's still going to be variances between fitment of this guy's lowers with this guy's uppers with that guy's barrel. That happens.
Oh, yeah.
We see the same thing here in that even with this gun, which is the most parts we've outsourced, like we don't do polymer. We're not good at that. We're not something we're going to develop overnight. But with silencers, it literally is. It's steel and aluminum and stellite in the, you know, in the door, and we do our own anodizing. We do our own black ox. And the only thing we really don't do is melanite. I mean, we obviously don't make t-shirts, but you know, there's a handful of things that we don't make in this building, but the rest of it, what it allows us to do is make good decisions and be most flexible. When the surge came last year for silencers, we were able to get people that were qualified vendors for us to be able to help us make more, but we still assembled everything in the building. We still made all the core components where the tolerances were needed. You know, we still, the EDMs, there's just certain things that we have to make sure we control to make sure that, you know, that the bore is concentric, that the it's put together correctly, that, you know, the welds are done correctly. There's core pieces of manufacturing functionality that we don't want to outsource because it's not worth it to us to accept that kind of liability or that kind of risk with the customer. So vertical integration joins kind of innovation, education, and advocacy. Our CEO, Josh, is very active, you know, going and visiting states, going to the national capital, talking to the congressmen and senators. I mean, he has basically been opening new markets is what he is doing full time. Yeah. That and, you know, obviously investor relations and things that CEOs do. You know, Jonathan, who's our other founder, has been very much focused on R&D and operations. He's been the guy driving the, you know, he hand-coded our ERP system, you know, because the system that runs our company, we have our own software developers. We have several of them and we have Jonathan. That had to be built from the ground up because of the forms. There's no like off this, you can't buy SAP and give me the NFA module, right? Like it doesn't exist. And since there's so much about how do we embed a barcode in the form as it goes to ATF and as it comes back in, it scans back in, it tells the system that this form has been approved. There's all that constant 41-day average turn for a form 3 and the 9-month, 6 to 9 months for the form 4. Like we have to keep track of all that constantly. What can be made? And managing that supply chain is all done through a system that like, and you got to remember, like John was a sound studio technician. Neither one of our founders have a college degree. Josh was a photographer. They're both just really smart guys who, when they get passionate about stuff, want to learn. And so they taught themselves to code. They taught themselves to machine. Josh went dealer by dealer around this country and said, carry our silencers. Now, obviously we've gotten a lot bigger. Yeah. I mean, I was employee 80 out of the 260 that we have at our peak. We were at about 350. But, you know, we've had to ebb and flow with marketplace demand. Yeah. And, you know, the core team is always going to remain committed to the innovation, the education, and advocacy, the vertical integration. Then we have kind of a transparency, accountability thing. We tell our employees a lot of information about how the business is doing, about what we're doing next. You know, we trust them. It's kind of an important thing for us to do. Not everybody does that. It's not, you know.
Really wise of you,
I think. Well, it's a double-edged sword. In the modern social media age, there's always stuff that gets out. There's always rumors about the company on the internet or individuals on the internet based upon current or former employees saying this or that. It's going to happen. Yeah. It happens all the time. We accept that. But we also feel that like it's important for them to make good decisions, whether they're running a machine, they're shooting a video, like they got to kind of understand what we're trying to do.
Yeah, everybody gets on board and they hopefully have the same vision.
They do. And most of our people here are super passionate. You know, we try to do everything we can culturally. We have dogs in the office. Everybody's concealed carry. You know, we let people check out guns and silencers to go shoot and hunt on the weekends. I mean, we have a lot of things about this company that we try to do for the employees so that they feel like they're part of something. They feel like they're making history. We use them as extras in our videos because we ask them. We ask them every 6 months, what if you could do one thing to make this company better? And then me, Josh, and John sit down. We look at the list. And we go, what can we do? What makes sense? And sometimes it's things that we didn't know about. Hey, the air quality in this particular section is horrible. We're like, hey, that's something we need to do something about right now. And we just didn't know. We hadn't really known, right? Or then sometimes it's like, hey, what would be really cool is if we did X. And we're like, you know what? We should do that. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, innovation is clearly at the heart. You know, we've been walking around a little bit here, and we're going to do some more video later, but it's very clear that innovation is it's on every wall.
It is, and like for R&D in particular, because everybody thinks of R&D, but it's everywhere, right? Where for R&D, they have their own machines. That's one of the biggest things is a small company can usually not afford to give the R&D guys their own machines. They're kind of co-using them. When the operations guys aren't, we got to make the money first and maybe you'll get at it. And so when you have rapid prototype plastic, rapid prototype metal, the R&Ds are all the engineers are machinists. They're drawing it and making it and drawing it and making it. It completely compresses the cycle of how long it takes to get an idea to reality. And that's one of those things that like we consciously made that bet. Okay, guess what? We're going to have less money. But it's more important that those guys can do this faster and we can get more new products to market than it is that we have all this money, but we like wait 3 years for the next silencer to come out.
Right.
But that same spirit exists, you know, whether it's in sales or in marketing, to be able to say like, you know, our sophisticated data operation, our ability to actually understand who our customers are, who are our dealers, what makes them successful, how do I find more customers like this? What kinds of things do they like to do? Now I need to go make content around those kinds of things and get reach more people like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in every aspect, we're just trying to think like we don't do print and we don't do TV. We don't pay for it. We are vertically integrated, not just on the floor. We own all of our marketing. We don't use an agency. Yeah. Every single thing. We from video to photos to business intelligence and analytics to design. I have 4 designers, right? Like that's what they do.
I'm jealous, frankly.
It's actually a lot less expensive, and you have and like our designers. That's a perfect example, right? They come from the local university. They come out here. Most junior designers are going to do one type of thing at some large firm.
Yeah,
here they're doing web, print, catalog, merch, packaging. I mean, on a daily basis, they're involved in 5 projects that are vastly different. And they love it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, hey, you know, where else am I going to, in my early 20s, be able to get this kind of a varied experience doing something that's kind of fun and like, and having complete sway to be like, hey, like our maximum box is going to cost us, you know, $20. Because we looked at it consciously and said, we do not want a propylene plastic case with a bunch of warnings all over it. Like, this is a great looking gun. I want a great looking box. Make me a great looking box. And then we shipped it around the country and we said, okay, that corner got dented. Is that worth it? What can I put between here so it doesn't get scuffed? I want, because you got to remember everything we sell, it's like it doesn't get to the guy for 9 to 12 months. So it's a year, right? So, and it has to be, the serial number has to be checked at the distributor and checked at the dealer and then checked at when the guy buys it and then checked when the guy picks it up. So that has to endure. What do I have to do to protect this gun during that period of time? What do I have to do to protect the packaging so that unboxing experience is still like, yeah,
this is like, cool.
I'm glad I bought that. We didn't want our box to look like everyone else's box. And so that's a challenge to those guys to be able to be like, and I said, go down to the gun store, buy a gun, and then ask them to look at all the boxes. They will. They'll do it. As long as we were making Beretta threaded barrels anyway. Just go buy a Beretta because we need 5 or 10 of them to do the threaded barrels and test them. And then talk to the guy for an hour. He's probably not doing much. And they were like, this is amazing. They're all the same. And we're like, yes. Now I want you to go do something different.
Great example.
Wow. I think we've probably taken about all your time, but with all these different pieces, vertical integration. I mean, you have an incredible operation here. A lot of moving parts. That obviously has got to come with some challenges too. could you elaborate just briefly on what maybe some of those challenges are and how you've overcome them?
So high volume, high mix factory full of controlled items that gets audited once a year. Those are, yes, there are challenges associated with that. You know, trying to level load production so that if there are risks, if a machine, critical machine breaks, if there is a problem, we don't, you know, sacrifice, we don't try not to ship everything at the end of the month. You know, we are always trying to stay compliant with our regulatory body. At the same time, we have hundreds of thousands of serial numbers in play at any given time that are all controlled items. So an ATF audit can significantly impact our business, but we know it's what happens. Yeah. It happens to every dealer, but to someone like us, like there's literally, you know, 15 to 20 guys in the plant counting serial numbers, and it can take weeks. That can slow us down. It's a challenge to the business, but it's also like, it's what happens, right? It's not like we have a voice in that. And, you know, it's interesting with the ATF. The ATF is a challenge for all gun businesses, but at the same time, like I understand what they have to go through. We just had a conversation with them last week. There's a common perception that the $200 tax stamp goes to the ATF. So therefore there somehow should be some elasticity between the guys who examine the forms and approve them and how many there are. And the simple fact is that's not true. As of January, there were 150,000 forms behind on Form 4s from the peak last year. We're just starting to get forms back from May of last year. Okay.
It's March.
And the thing is because they can't hire and train fast enough to support a surge in demand. And it's not their fault because that money goes to big treasury. It doesn't go to ATF. You write the check to the ATF, but it's still, it winds up in the US Treasury. Right. So the idea that how do we make these wait times shorter? We have gone to them to talk about software. You know, hey, for example, a Form 3 takes 41 days. You have an SOT. I have an SOT. I want to send you an item. It needs to go in paper to the ATF where it goes through the pile. And then somebody goes, yep, you're in the database. You're in the database. Good. Okay. I would like to think in 2017. That could be faster,
right?
That could be automated in some way. I know you're in the database. I mean, there's zillions of systems out there that work this way that check these kinds of things on a daily basis. You know, could be a solution that might help everybody. Even if you just did form threes and all the examiners moved over to work on form fours, then technically you have more resources that could improve form fours. Form fours should technically get faster, right? Yeah. So those are the kinds of things that we talk to our, you know, we're always looking for ways not just to improve what happens inside this building, which yes, on a daily basis is challenging in its own ways. It's how do we find ways to work with our regulatory body better such that we can help them. Hey, you know, we can help them get off of paper.
Yeah.
They experimented with it. It was called e-forms. Happened about 2 years ago. The traffic shut it down and there has not been a revival since. We would love to see something like that. We would love to help design it if that's necessary. We have programmers. I mean, we offered that in a conference with the ATF like 2 years ago because they were like, well, we can't do that. And we're like, look, like we'll give you program. Like it helps everybody, right? Yeah, like why wouldn't we? So those are some of the things that when we say, how can we improve? Yeah, we can always put out great new products. We can always get more efficient in our manufacturing operations so that we can potentially pass cost savings on to the consumer. We can always improve how we educate and how we make it easier to buy. But I mean, if you were to poll our customers, it's like, oh, I got to do what in order to buy this? And oh, that's a long time I have to wait. And those are the two biggest things that we kind of like sit around every day and think about how do we crack this nut? Because there's just uncertainty around, we don't control it.
Yep. Sure.
Well, that's great stuff. And Jason, we really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us today out of your busy schedule. It's fascinating to see everything that's going on here at Silencer Co. All the innovation, all the hard work and effort that's going into it all. It's really cool. For you know, last words for folks listening. You know, I kind of get the sense that there's people who are waiting to buy. You know, waiting for HPA. I'm kind of feeling like don't do that. Don't wait. Buy now. And maybe in the process of waiting for an application, things get fixed so that you don't have to wait, or I don't know, but what would you say to folks listening as kind of parting words?
So right now we do not feel that HPA will pass within the next 9 months. That's your average wait time for a silencer. So if you want one, It's time to, you know, go get one. Yeah. If it does pass in the interim, the provisions in the bill as it's written right now are you get your $200 tax stamp refunded in a, you know, when you do your taxes the next year, and you just go pick it up. So what you will see once, if it does pass, if and when it does pass, you will see a demand far outstrip supply. So what a lot of our dealers are saying to consumers is right now you're going to get the best deal that you're going to get. Because once demand far outstrips supply, prices don't tend to go down. Mm-hmm. And you can go lock in your serial number right now and probably lock in the best price that you will see for the foreseeable future. Because this industry can't grow to 10x overnight. It will take probably 5 years. I mean, we can reasonably grow 36 to 70,000 silencers a year if we hit the pedal to the metal and try not to break the company. Right. And that's not, and that's something that we always have to keep in mind is that many of us are not here just to run a straight manufacturing operation. We like making cool stuff. There's always going to be a certain amount of drag associated with making cool stuff. Yeah. So for consumers out there right now, you know, you want to lock in your purchase and you think that whether you think this is likely to happen or not, worst case scenario is you pay your $200 and you get your thing 9 months from now and you have it and you use it. Best case scenario is in that period of time, the legislation passes, you get to go pick up your item, you get to go right off the $200 on your tax return the next year. And you've already got, and you got it at a great price.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Before the market exploded.
Good idea. Go pick one up. Get your order in.
And if you haven't already, check out fightthenoise.org and silencerco.com. Great resources there, and keep your eye peeled for more video and things that we're going to be capturing today with Jason and his team.
Yep. So thanks for sitting down with us again with a true American hero.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason, for your time.
Okay, so we're back, and I hope you enjoyed that interview together with Jason Schauble from Silencer Co. Kind of like as we were leading into the playback of this interview, Jacob, and we kind of highlighted or previewed a couple things there. Obviously, the Maxim 9 has been getting a lot of attention, right? And the one thing that we spent the day kind of looking at as concealedcarry.com, right, was that I don't think anybody before has ever thought about carrying a gun concealed for self-defense in particular that has a suppressor on it, right?
And yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and here we have the first integral suppressed pistol.
Yeah, so for so long we think of a suppressor as this thing that attaches to the end that makes the gun big.
Yeah,
you know, that makes the gun big, and so the idea that it could just be, you know, integrally just built in, that it's just part of the weapon, is so fantastic, so amazing. It was funny, we show up to the Silencer Co. the day of this interview, I guess it was yesterday here in Salt Lake, and we kind of get out of the cars and I'm like, and just kind of my normal mental checklist, like, did we bring eyes and ears? And Riley says something to the effect of, we don't need ears. And it's true. We got to shoot a lot of guns at Silencer Co. office, and no hearing protection required. And it's just such a fantastic idea to think that I'm picking up this gun and it was manufactured in this building and I don't have to attach anything. It's just, I can just shoot it. And, you know, what you heard Jason say in the interview that I thought really stuck out to me is he said, you know what, if a customer can walk into a gun store and he looks in the case and you have the Glock 17 sitting there and the Maxim 9 right next to it, and there's no difference in terms of paperwork and process, you just pick which one you want to buy. You know, a lot of people are going to pick the Maxim 9. Like, they're going to take the one that shoots, you know, that's hearing safe. And I was like, yeah, totally.
Besides the fact it looks freaking cool.
It really does. It shoots well. The ergonomics are so great. I think, you know, the slide release was nice. The trigger is pretty good. I wouldn't say it's the most amazing trigger I've ever used, but, you know, relative to other striker fire guns, I think it's a quality trigger.
I think it's about what you expect.
Yeah, the weight is not, you know, what you might think. You know, you might expect a very heavy gun. The weight distribution is also very, very friendly. It was fun to shoot.
Yeah, it was. I echo a lot of your assessments too, Jacob. And folks, you'll be seeing a more complete review from us soon. We also have quite a bit of video content we'll be releasing just as soon as we can get it produced. You know, including kind of some views of, you know, from our tour through the facility, but also some videos showing us shooting the Maxim 9, as well as a bunch of other of their suppressor products. I mean, keep in mind, this is a company, once again, that less than 10 years ago just got started. John and Josh there at Silencer Co. started the company. Now they got Jason on board too. It's a really big piece of their business, of course. Jason, with all his experience in the past with Remington and other companies he's worked for, Tracking Point and so forth. But you know, they started less than 10 years ago, and like I said, they kind of took the world by storm. And I think besides the grassroots effort of educating the public, educating dealers, getting themselves set up all across the country, and it's that, but also that they are leaders in innovation in the suppressor market, because, you know, here we have the Maxim 9. That's obviously a huge innovation. It's been a long development there. But here we held it, we put it in our hands, we shot it. It's a fantastic product. Also the company that first made a suppressor that wasn't just round.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which allowed you to have bigger baffles and all kinds of benefits that go along with that. Mm-hmm. And also, let's see, the first hearing safe 45 ACP suppressor.
Correct. Yep, first suppressor that's hearing safe for 45.
First suppressor for a shotgun that allowed you to shoot almost, you know, most varieties of shotgun rounds, different lengths of barrels and all that. So, I mean, this is a leader in the market, leader in innovation, and they just are killing it from all angles as far as I'm concerned in that regard. So the Maxim 9 was awesome. It was sweet. I did kind of like some reloads with it. Ergonomics were great. It shot great. It's accurate as heck. What's not to like about it? And so if we get this Hearing Protection Act passed, and we can get to a point where, seriously, like you said, Jacob, and described, you can walk into a shop and just see in the glass case all these different guns, and then you have the Maxim 9. Like,
it's pretty compelling.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but it's a gun and a suppressor in one product that's probably really does cost less than buying those two things separately. And like I said, it just freaking looks cool.
Yeah. I would encourage you, if you're not already subscribed, make sure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel. That'd be really, really important, as we are all constantly putting out a lot of video content, but we're going to be putting a lot of work into some of the editing and post-production of all this, you know, hours worth of video content we captured at Silencer Co. yesterday there in Salt Lake. And so as we refine that, edit it down, and put together some great content and a good review for you guys, you want to make sure you get that on our YouTube channel.
Yep. Go check it out. So good stuff. Today's episode was brought to you also by Sports Afield. Now available at their lowest price ever on concealedcarry.com, Sports Afield brings you a series of handgun vaults that will be any competitor in price and quality. In addition, you can now find select full-size safes from Sports Afield on concealedcarry.com. I mean, yes, we will ship these things to you. So, the shipping is reasonable and the warranty is second to none. All full-size safes have a lifetime warranty that even covers the paint. Trust this 100-year-old American brand with your firearm storage, and you can check it out at concealedcarry.com/sportsafield. And by Mantis X. Being called the instructor in your pocket, Mantis X attaches to your firearm and sends real-time data back to your mobile phone that will guide you in correcting the most common deficiencies as a shooter. Tired of that grouping being too high, too far to the left, too wide? Go check out Mantis X. It will be your new best friend as far as teaching you how to shoot better. Watch Riley and Jacob's review and learn more at concealedcarry.com/Mantis X. Picks of the week. I'm going to go first because I'm going to steal it first. My pick this week is the Mantis X. No, hold on.
The Maxim 9.
Another,
I said it first.
Fetch. I just got done talking about Mantis X. The Maxim 9, that would be my pick. And if you're taking that, then I'd have to pick probably the new Saker ASR suppressors from Silencer Co. We got to shoot some of those as well. Really, really cool products. So,
yeah, my pick would just be Silencer Co. I just was very, very impressed with the way that they treated us. They welcomed us into their facility, and they really went to some effort to make sure that we saw everything we wanted to see, that we really got to shoot everything we wanted to shoot, and that we understood, you know, what they were about. And I'll add to that that, you know, it's one thing to see a company's operations, another thing to kind of get a sense for what the company stands for and what they believe in and what their, you know, what their real pillars are, what their you know, mission is. And this is a company that clearly cares about their customers, cares about their industry. They're constantly advocating, you know, and working with organizations like NSSF or the NRA. They work directly with the ATF. They're trying to make the industry better. They're trying to make it easier for the consumer. Yeah. And they're trying to lead the way. They're trying to innovate constantly and make everything better. And it just, that's very clear that they care about their internal people, but also about their customers. And so Silencer Co., that'd be my pick this week.
Yeah, you know, and I suspect that there might be some of you listening that would think, well, you guys are going to be biased in this regard because, I mean, they invited us in and
yes.
they gave us gold class, you know, gold level treatment. I mean, just
so I'm biased. Yes.
So we're biased.
I'll take it.
But I mean, it's honestly honest feedback because here's what impressed me probably the most is their commitment to doing all the right things. Creating really cool, innovative products that in some cases people never thought about before, but also that they're committed to doing it all in-house as much as possible. And you know, there's suppressor companies out there that they don't do that. There's AR-15 manufacturers out there that do not do that. They are assemblers of parts. And in fact, Silencer Co. makes silencers for other people, right? So, I mean, like, the fact is, you walk through the whole facility and you get the sense that, you know, as you move from one part of the shop floor to another part, to another part, to another part, that everything there exists for a reason, that all these people have their different jobs and different tasks and different functions. And it's all for a reason. It's all for a purpose. And it's also that they can have this complete control throughout the whole process, that the utmost of quality and care, I mean, we can't even talk to the detail that I'd like to talk to as far as how they perform their QC, because he even told us as we're sitting there talking to one of our dudes that does a lot of their QC work. He's like, you can't put this on camera. You can't put this on film and don't really want to even talk about it so much. It's just, but I could tell you, I mean, what they're doing as far as their quality control and whatnot is really impressive. It was also fun too, walking through just, you know, there are things on the walls at times. They're like, you can't put that on camera.
yeah. It was constantly, don't get that on camera.
This is a new product here, or this is something that's coming, or hey, you know, there's some things coming down the pike here in the next year or two that's going to be really exciting. That's what's really cool to see is, I mean, they are a big company now comparatively in the silencer world, but that also means that they can do a lot more R&D, that they can be more innovative, they can do more awesome stuff. But like I said, the really impressive thing was just simply seeing that they're touching every part of the process of making their products, and that's kind of rare in this day and age of subcontract work. Frankly, there's a lot of things these days it's just subcontracted out.
Yeah, they're very committed to doing it in-house and leveraging that to the best of their ability.
Yep. So we had a great time, great day. It's been a good week so far. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the podcast. Coming up next, we're going to get back to Colorado and get kind of back in the swing of things. We got some video projects coming up. We've got all kinds of things in the works. And anything specific that you wanted to mention, Jacob?
No, nothing specific comes to mind. We're working on some new products and specifically, you know, some more training. We want to make sure that as a company that our focus is always on training and both for ourselves, for our employees, but also for you, our customers, so we can all be better shooters and better prepared to defend.
Yep, totally. Well, cool. Appreciate all of you that support the podcast, that listen, that subscribe. If you haven't done so already, I hope that you'll take the chance now and click that little button in your podcatcher app, whatever you're using. Click that little subscribe button. Make sure that you're not missing any content here on the Concealed Carry Podcast. And then also, Jacob mentioned it earlier, be sure that you're subscribed to and following our YouTube channel. That's where you're going to see a lot of the video content that we're working on right now, including the stuff from Silencer Co. It'll go up on YouTube here in probably a couple of weeks. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I mean, our Instagram following is growing by the dozens every day, which is really exciting to see. We hope that you'll join those dozens. So go check it out. I've been putting some pretty cool stuff, I think, on our Instagram page. And yeah, so any last words?
You know, if you're out and about for spring break, if you're traveling, be safe out there and make sure you're checking the local laws as you travel.
Good thoughts, as always, Jacob. So with that, we'll bid you farewell. Take care till next week. Next week, let's see, Monday, we got our news episode coming up. And we'll have Greta back on the podcast. We introduced her last week, and so that's pretty exciting to see. So anyway, take care. We'll see you next time. A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. The Concealed Carry Podcast, Concealed Carry Inc., ConcealedCarry.com, and their affiliates strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in this podcast.